The Setzer Church Leaders Podcast is part of the Church Leaders Podcast Network, which is dedicated to resourcing church leaders in order to help them face the complexities of ministry today. The Church Leaders Podcast Network supports pastors and ministry leaders by challenging assumptions, by providing insights, and offering practical advice and solutions and steps that will help church leaders navigate the variety of cultures and contexts that we're serving in. Learn more at churchleaders.com/podcastnetwork.
Welcome to the Setzer Church Leaders Podcast, conversations with today's top ministry leaders to help you lead better every day. And now, here are your hosts, Ed Setzer and Daniel Yang.
Welcome to the Setzer Church Leaders Podcast, where we're helping Christian leaders navigate and lead through the cultural issues of our day. My name's Daniel Yang, National Director of Churches of Welcome at World Relief, and today we're talking with Leonce Crump Jr. Leonce is an international speaker, former NFL athlete, and the co-founder and senior pastor of Renovation Church in Atlanta. He's a champion for the church's participation in focused and intentional cultural renewal. And today we're talking about his book, The Resilience Factor, a step-by-step guide to catalyze an unbreakable team, co-authored with Ryan Hartwig and Warren Bird. Now let's go to Ed Setzer, editor-in-chief of Outreach Magazine and the dean of Talbot School of Theology.
And a friend of Leonce. That's I lead that on my bio, friend of Leonce Crump. So, you know, resilience, man, it's like I spoke to this group, large church pastors in this group called Transformation Ministries. And man, people just want to talk about resilience. I was talking about cultural things, and I say this one phrase sometimes. I say, you're going to need reservoirs of resilience and communities of support to get through. Well, 2024, I mean, it's going to be, I'm of the view, it's going to be more divided than ever before. This may be the hardest year of our ministry journey. And so you co-wrote, and just so people know, there's like multiple authors in this, forward by Todd Bolsinger, which of course so many of us have engaged some of his work, but it's called The Resilience Factor, a step-by-step guide to catalyze an unbreakable team. And it's just fascinating when I talk about these things. Now, since that meeting, people said, would you come do this with my meeting? And I talk about how we need reservoirs of resilience and communities of support. And I usually frame those things separately, but I think part of the brilliance of the book is you're sort of bringing those things together. Resilience and team really matter. And I want to kind of talk about what that looks like, how you've walked through it, because you talk about in the book several new realities that's important for leaders to know. Let's start there. What are some of those realities that leaders need to know?
Yes, the first and I think maybe most important reality that we need to accept is that the disruption we experience is actually normal. And what we experienced as relative stability, depending on your age, between, you know, the early to mid 80s up until quote unquote COVID, what felt like relative stability was actually abnormal. And when you look at the arc of history, when you look at the arc of the world, disruption is actually the most prevalent reality. And I think what I've experienced, you know, leading up to writing the book and then since writing the book and talking to other leaders, is that has been the one that's been the biggest clicking point, because everybody was on their heels coming out of COVID. Andy Crouch wrote a great article about it being an ice age, and everybody was trying to figure out how to pivot and how do we navigate this new world, and how do we navigate this disruption as though disruption was something that is not a part of the normal rhythm of life. So that's probably the first and the biggest. There's a few others. You know, the definitions have changed dramatically. Now direction is seen as dominance and clarity is seen as control. You know, so you have to be careful in how you lead and how you speak and nuanced in how you engage. And so I think as we face these new realities, it's going to require some learning and some agility on top of a resilience to continue to move forward through the difficulty.
Good, good, good. Okay, so I want to lean in on that, because even when you said some of those things, there are people who are going to hear, and right now you talk about leadership, and they hear abusive leadership, right? So we all have, you know, we've had these conversations. I mean, who hasn't listened to the rise and fall of Mars Hill? So we seem to be in a bit of a backlash against leadership in this moment, and maybe the backlash is caused by bad leadership and bad leaders. Both at work. So you're kind of making a case that leadership is going to be important for our future together. But I mean, Are we going to go through the cycle where we all back into the CEO model that we kind of learned from the 80s wasn't really helpful? I mean, where are we headed?
Well, I think, and I do say I think we're headed more toward team leadership and transformational leadership, not the CEO models of the past, the top-down hierarchical structures that we were taught in how to run a business and attach Jesus to it to some degree. But I really think we're moving more toward a team leadership, a true shared plurality among staff, even if you have a point leader, that the weight is distributed across several others. And then I think we're moving toward transformational leadership. And what I mean by that is a leadership that is actually seeking to bring out the best in people, to see them formed as the leaders that they can become, rather than as a means to an end of what we're trying to do organizationally. Because you're right, leadership itself is under question right now. It's under fire, not just in the church, but everywhere. And I think in part, it's a meeting of a moment. There has been abusive leaders. There has been narcissistic leaders. There has been crazy, you know, kind of crazy people sitting at the helm of large organizations. But then you also have a cultural moment happening simultaneously where the idea of a leader, good, bad, or otherwise, is just summarily rejected. And when those two things are married together, you kind of find yourself in the situation we're in right now. And I think the greatest gift we'll have going forward, again, is to not have one person be the focal point organizationally, or where the buck stops, or, you know, at the top of the hill, but that there really is a team approach, which brings with it kind of an inherent accountability that people say they want to see in their leaders.
But let's talk about that. I mean, if we're reimagining leadership for a resilient future, a resilient, more robust future, like, what does that mean for team? Like, in your mind, what characterizes a thriving team then? And if we're reimagining leadership, like, does it take longer to develop those kinds of teams?
Oh, it absolutely takes longer to develop those kinds of teams. And I believe it's developed in tiers. I mean, you can bring new people in to that situation, and their on ramp will pick up where it picks up. So yeah, I do think it takes longer. And what I see, what characterizes a resilient team, number one, is flexibility and durability, right? So we have to be able to take some hits and also flex to the reality that we find ourselves in. I think radical candor will come to define resilient teams. We have to be able to tell each other the truth and tell it in love and not worry about psychological or emotional safety in the organizational system. I think resilient teams will have a very clear, very focused understanding of a shared mission and a shared direction and shared values and shared language, because those are all of the pieces that actually bolster us when the storm comes. It's, you know, it's like we're building a ship and we're setting it out to sea, and radical candor is the starboard side, and flexibility and strength is the port side, and so you're putting the ship together so that when you get out to sea and the storm comes, you actually have a buttress and a chance to not only survive but to thrive.
Yeah, flexibility, durability. I mean, let's use athlete. You're an athlete. You play professional sports, and you know the longevity of Tom Brady. He often attributes to the way that he trained, right? And he focused on durability and agility. I mean, and developed the whole training system around that. Do you think that like our profile for a high level leader needs to change? Okay, talk about that.
I think it has changed for those organizations that are moving forward, because it is becoming less about even the degrees, you know, and I'm not anti-education. Please don't get mad at me, Dr. Stetzer, but I am finishing a doctorate right now, and it is not at Wheaton or Talbot.
You've made the wrong choice, so that may be the reason. That, but anyway, keep going.
I needed it to be local so I could keep parenting my kids.
You know, here's the amazing thing. You can do your doctorate remotely now. But anyway, let's not get there. Sorry. You did start this.
I believe in education. I do, yeah. But I don't think education and even experience are going to be the first two things that most healthy, vibrant, growing organizations are going to look for. Not that they're not important, but I think the profile of a leader has really changed to ask the question, what have you endured and how did you endure it? Mm-hmm. What kind of people have you formed in your wake? What kind of leaders have you formed in your wake? And what will you do were we to face another pandemic or, mm-hmm. or to quote Rick Warren from 2020, we faced five different significant traumas at once, racial instability, financial insecurity, economic fragility, political incivility, and a pandemic at the same time. So we've gone through that now. As a leader, if you're coming into my organization, I want to hear you tell me. So when we go through that again, because instability is normative, not stability, how will you face that moment? How will you lead through it? And even trying to understand the difference, and I don't know if we have time for this tangent, so cut me off at any moment, but the difference between management and leadership. You know, I think for a couple cycles, a couple generations of the church, we've hired managers over systems and processes in order to continue to build, especially under the guise of the church growth model. But management and leadership are vastly different things. And so I think the new profile, not that management is not necessary to some degree, but I think the new profile for a leader is going to be just that, a leader and not a manager. And a leader is someone who charts a course through uncharted territory.
Yeah, you've talked some about, you know, kind of what you've been through. Like people, you're going to talk to people, ask them what they've been through, how they led through it. So you've been through, and we've all walked through the last few years together. You're in Atlanta. You're in Atlanta. You've talked about, you know, what you kind of walk through, asking people what they walk through, what the journey they've been through. And, you know, you've been pastoring, you planted a church, you've been pastoring a multicultural church in Atlanta. You've moved, you experienced some of the differences there. And I imagine that this has not been all, you know, sunshine and roses the last few years for you as well. How have you walked through, dealt with conflict, built team, struggled, failed? Just kind of take a little time to walk us through what that looks like for you.
Yeah. So let me give you a flyover first, just a timeline. 2019, we went through an incredible church trauma that led to a splinter. We can unpack more of that in a moment. 2020. My friend and mentor, your friend, who walked me through that difficulty in 2019, took his life with respect to what he'd gone through. 2021, my brother passed away from cancer, and he had had cancer through 2019 and 2020 when all these things were going on. And in the middle of all of that, I had to lead a church through COVID that didn't gather for almost 14 months. And we didn't know if we would have a church or not on the other side of it, because Atlanta's restrictions were as much as California or any other more progressive city. And then when we did finally come back, we required masks, and we had a group of people who refused to return because we were requiring masks. And then when we made masks optional, we had a group of people leave who refused to return because we weren't requiring masks. So all of these things kind of happened at once. And you know, I got to be honest with you, the last year has been pretty exceptional. But the, you know, four before that, man, were the hardest in my adult life. And I honestly, I marvel sometimes. I was talking to my friend Nathan Art yesterday, who I think you know as well. And he said, man, you sound really good. And I said, yeah, I'm surprised, honestly, that I am still standing, that I am still leading, that I still want to lead in light of everything that we've navigated and how it's affected our children. I've got two teenage daughters. They were deeply impacted by what happened with the church, because there were people who had been in their lives since they were, you know, 3 years old that are now raging at their father and, you know, saying that their father has done X, Y, and Z, and they can't reconcile that with who they know me to be and who they thought they knew these people to be. And so there's just been ripples through everything. And, you know, going through that, I think the two main points I would draw out is, number one, when you go through something like that, especially laden with accusations, I think the first thing you have to do is look at yourself. And that's what I did. I started asking questions of my own leadership. Where have I contributed to what I'm hearing, to what I'm experiencing. I talked a little bit about that with Preston that we, you know, we mentioned earlier.
Talk about Preston Sprinkle. That was before we were on the recording. So you did a podcast with Preston Sprinkle where you unpacked some of the conflict that was there.
Yeah. And just the, you know, step one was, okay, what part of this do I have to own? And there were things for me to own. At no point have I been an abusive leader. I'll say that outright, but I have been a driver. I have been a person who was more ambitious than I was compassionate. I have been a person that expected people to run at my pace rather than their pace. And so I had to own those things. And then I had to sort through the other things and what that meant relationally on an interpersonal side. And then what that meant organizationally, as people had many, many questions about what was going on as our church was really splintering toward the end of 2019 and leading into 2020. But through all of that, the way that I led and the way that I think you have to lead in this, I attribute this to Darren Patrick's leadership in my life. He said, man, you've got to be radically transparent. You've got to be incredibly honest and forthcoming. And you've got to move toward it, not away from it. And I think the temptation for us as leaders so often is to retreat from the conflict. And a bunch of small conflicts over the years then becomes a giant cancer. And at that point, it's almost, you know, irreparable. You can't put it back together. And so that was one of the things he told me is you got to move toward the conflict. And so that's what I did for a year and a half. Everything that came, I moved toward it, whether that was in person or through email or through social media or online. We just moved toward the conflict. And the people that stayed, the staff team that remained, and not everybody left because of that. We only lost two staff members because of the conflict. Then we had to lay off several others because of COVID. But the ones that remained, they are some of the most resilient people that I've ever known because they have weathered the storm and determined that they were going to see us get to the other side of it. And so, yes, I was leading, but I was also being led, being inspired, being pushed by the people on my team. And that's how we got through it.
Yeah, the only way out is through. And so that's part of you can feel that reality. And I appreciate your transparency. Again, we listened to that podcast Preston Sprinkle did with you. I thought that was interesting and helpful. And for me, it kind of speaks to a cultural moment. I mean, your own talk about where you failed and you learned, but our own cultural moment, we're all going to have failures and the transparency that comes from there, how to respond to them. But I also am a kind of the view that the way you lead is not always just, well, I'm not saying you would do this, but for a lot of pastors, I'm just want to talk to them. It's not just, I read in the book, I should do these four things. I think that in our world today with high levels of suspicion, which concerns about abuse and more, is that your leadership is more suspect. And therefore you start with a trust deficit that you have to build towards. So we're maybe in the past, you know, I was pastor in the mid 90s, man, people just sort of trusted this and I could be a hard charging leader. And I think a hard charging leader, even if you're doing things right, it can be received wrong.
Yes.
And so, and I think this is again, the book is The Resilience Factor, a step-by-step guide to catalyze an unbreakable team. And I think you kind of go through this and you unpack some of these things about leadership. So talk to me a little bit about the structure of the book and how you would, you know, you kind of laid out some themes around it. Remember, it's a step-by-step guide. But because you're trying to get to the kind of healthy, thriving, healthy relational, healthy structural team that we all want. So talk us a little bit about how it's structured.
Yeah, the book is structured over eight kind of movements with 40 or so different parts in it. And it is more of a workbook than it is, you know, a weekend read type of leadership book. So number one, I would say to anybody listening or watching, it's going to be best done as a team. We wrote it that way intentionally. Can you do it on your own?
As a team, four teams. I think that's worth noting. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Which was quite the process.
Oh, it is. It is. I've written three author books before, and it's a lot.
My goodness. It's a lot. And we, as a team writing, faced some of the challenges that we were unpacking in the book. And so that really brought a lot of it to life. So you've got eight movements, about 40 parts, and each of them is there to move you closer to the type of team that hopefully you want to be on and you want to be a part of. And we address everything from high level theoretical understanding of team dynamics and how teams form, and what the necessary ingredients are to actually form a team rather than a group of individuals with a common cause. And those are not the same thing, all the way down to the nitty gritty of how to structure your meetings. What should be an email versus what requires a meeting, and the rhythms of organizational life that necessitate the type of team that we want to have. And so we walk it all the way through and take people through a process of developing a team charter, of developing a code of conduct, things that nobody ever told me that, you know, nobody told me coming out of it, hey, to have a really healthy, resilient team, you guys need some kind of code of conduct and a team charter that you agree upon. As you do your work, developing and honing a powerful and catalytic mission statement. And then toward the end, we actually talk about multiplication as well. So this is kind of a whole orbed book around resilience and how it shows up in the different spaces of our daily life as leaders, and particularly in our teams. And the structure is built so that by the time you get to the end of the book, if you do the book, now if you just read the book, that's a different matter. If you do the book, I can say this without any hesitation, you will have a very different and a better team on the other side of it.
You know, Lance, I'd imagine if someone was starting a church and they were building for the first time, there's a bit of a different energy that goes into this. But coming off of your story and many stories of many pastors that I know, like they're in the process of rebuilding and, you know, they don't have that same energy, but they know that they need to get to this resilience, not just for themselves, but for their team. You know, walking through the structure of your book, like, what does a rebuild look like especially when you're starting from a place where, like, maybe you're at a deficit and you're trying to get above zero, mm-hmm. but you need to get to a place of resilience. So talk about that.
Yeah, two things. One, all of us, as Ed said, are at a trust deficit. So rebuilding, number one, is accepting that reality along with all the others. Disruption is normal. The definitions of leadership have changed. We are facing a trust deficit. We actually had this conversation as a team before we had our first regather to say, listen, we don't know who's coming. We don't know how they feel about us. And so we have to operate as such and win them again, and some win them for the first time. So that's part one of the rebuild. Part two is assessing who you have and where they are. I don't feel like in the church we have a high assessment culture, and I know that can get very corporate very quickly, but we have to be able to sit down and have a clear profile of the people on our team and determine fit for the season we're in, not the season we left. And I know that's challenging, but I'll give you an example to concretize it. You know, we used to have a full-time production guy. He was over all our production, and we were at a place where not only we could afford that, but to some degree we felt it was necessary. Well, when you come back from COVID and your church is 65% of what it was, if that, and your finances are about the same, and the dynamics of Sunday worship have changed, then you no longer need that role. It's not personal, but in assessing the needs of the team, you discover very quickly that you don't need everybody that you thought you did. You know, before COVID, I had a staff of 19, plus interns and residents and some, you know, contract folks and part-timers. Up until the end of 2023, there was only five of us full-time. And our church is just about catching up to where it was before COVID. Numerically, it's surpassed where it was financially. But there were only five of us running full-time. And we were having a conversation, like, how is this possible? Well, because when you have five people who are highly organized, highly resilient, highly focused, and have high degrees of ownership. That's another key ingredient to a resilient team, is high degrees of ownership. You know, I own my failures. I share my wins. When you have that kind of composition, then five people can accomplish as much as 19 could before. And we've done more ministry between 2021 and now than we did in the first 10 years of our church.
You know, it's tricky because you're talking about, you know, 19 staff down to five staff, and now you're building a little more. But you know that Christian ministry tends to focus, well, we often tend to hire quickly and fire slowly. And we don't, you know, it's seen as unloving. People, you know, I mean, people will just think you're bad if you know, and there are ways to let people go. There's, you know, Christ-like ways to do this. It's still, there's no scenario. And please, pastors are listening, never say, man, it's really hard for me to do this. I can assure you it's way harder for the person across the table who That's you're right. letting go. But man, how do you like navigate that in a time when people will see that as unloving? How do you assess whether or not you got the right people on your team?
Yeah, you assess it. I'll start there. You assess the people based on the need, based on the clarity of vision and mission, based on the weak points, and maybe weak points is the wrong word, but based on the places ministerially where you know their particular gifting matches that particular need. And that's where the assessment starts. And it doesn't mean that anything else won't be necessary in the future. We're just talking about right now. And I think the way you have that conversation is lovingly and honestly and winsomely, and you take the burden. It's what you just said. I'm not going to come into the conversation and say, man, this is really hard for me, because now I've centered myself in an interaction that is actually negatively affecting the person on the other side of the table. But that, you know, the example I gave, that's not a story. That's a real thing that happened. And that brother is still at our church. I helped him, you know, through giving a recommendation, and putting together a few, you know, pieces of collateral, helped him find a new role that he's thriving in. He's in a sales role, making more money than he's ever made in his life, because we had mapped his gifts while he was on our staff, and we knew kind of what he brought to the table, and we knew that he would thrive in that type of sales environment. And so I think the best way you can do it, and it still doesn't mean that there's not going to be sour feelings around it, but the best way you can do it is honestly, lovingly, humbly, transparently, and helpfully in trying to help them take their next step, and reminding them that, you know, unless it is about their performance, reminding them that this is not about your performance. This is about where we are financially, what we need contextually, and where we're going missionally. And this particular role doesn't fit the season. It doesn't mean that it'll never come back around. It just means that it doesn't fit the season now. So, like, we just hired a full-time kids director in December for the first time since before COVID. And we've been, you know, pulling in new roles as we've gone along and as we've seen need, and as we found the places in our community that needed to be shored up by full-time vocational ministers. But we really, I think the big shift for us coming out of COVID was as much philosophical as it was financial, as we revisited Ephesians 4 and we were reminded, like, the goal is not to hire as many people as possible to do as much ministry as possible. The goal is to hire the right amount of people to equip as many people as possible to do ministry.
Yeah, the subtitle of the book is a step-by-step guide to catalyze an unbreakable team. And I think oftentimes when people think unbreakable, they might be thinking like, you know, we will never face adversity, or we're just, you know, everything's hunky-dory and up and to the right. But probably the reality is that, you know, all teams will be challenged. And yeah. What is it about unbreakable teams? How do they approach conflict resolution? You know, what do they have in their reserves that allows them to actually work through conflict?
Yeah, the idea of an unbreakable team, as you said, is not that you'll never face adversity. It's that there's an expectation of adversity, right? That has to be the common denominator in the part of the composition of your team, is you expect to face challenge. And the way that an unbreakable team faces conflict, again, I hate to sound repetitive, but they move toward it and not away from it. They move toward it with transparency and honesty and humility and candor, rather than trying to cover and shade and avoid the difficulty. They actually lean into the punch rather than lean out, and then they reassess on the other side of it. And what I found in a lot of teams, honestly, is just the opposite. That, you know they have two or three families that are upset. They just hope that it'll go away. They know that the finances are not coming together for the budget year. They just hope there'll be a big windfall at the end of the year. I can give you several examples down that line. And a resilient and unbreakable team does just the opposite. We know we have three families who are upset. We're going to set up meetings and we're going to be proactive about the conversation. We know our finances aren't coming together the way that they should. We're going to start making budget cuts now. And if something comes in at the end of the year, then we'll reallocate it where we can. It's taking a proactive approach toward conflict that allows you to step right into the center of the tornado and make the decisions that you need to make to get to the other side of it. And I don't know if I can illustrate it any better, but that is the big difference. It's the ability to bend and not break. It is the ability to get hit and keep going. It is the ability to see a storm on the horizon and instead of riding in the opposite direction, actually riding straight toward it. And doing so, these are the other pieces, doing so unified around your vision, unified around your mission, unified around high trust, unified around high ownership, and understanding that we go in together, we come out together. We don't leave anyone in and we don't leave anyone behind, because it's the team that is actually facing this moment and not just some champion that we've sent out from among our ranks. And last thing I'll say here, I feel like that is the model that I used to exist in. If you remember that movie, Troy, right, where you send out a champion and they'll do the fighting and everybody cheers. And that model is not going to work in the world we're facing right now, at least not sustainably and not long term. We can't send out a champion and do all the bidding and then have the team pat him on the back. No, the team has to move and fight together.
We've been talking to Leon Skrump. You can learn more about him at leonskrump.com. Be sure to check out his book, The Resilience Factor, a step-by-step guide to catalyze an unbreakable team. And thanks again for listening to the Stetsa Church Leaders podcast. You can find more interviews as well as other great content for ministry leaders at churchleaders.com/podcast. And again, if you found our conversation today helpful, I'd love for you to take a few moments, leave us a review. That'll help other ministry leaders find us and benefit from our content. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.
You've been listening to the Stetzer Church Leaders podcast. For more great interviews, as well as articles, videos, and free resources, visit our website at churchleaders.com. Thanks for listening.